The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
And of course, good afternoon, folks. It's now 5 minutes after 12. Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor program with your favorite lunchtime doctor, Dr. Safia Mohammed, or Dr. Saf, as she's popularly known. Good afternoon, Doc.
Good afternoon, Base. Good afternoon to all those locked in to your Lunchtime Doctor. I am Dr. Safia Mohammed, here to answer your questions. As you know, we dissect these medical challenges. We offer advice in whatever area we can, and more so, what are those red flags and the next steps to ensure you optimize your health? As always, we welcome what you have on your lunchtime plate. You know, Bias, I think it's about time we start giving some prizes for these lunchtime plates that that are really hitting the mark on a healthy plate.
But I hope people will be truthful, you know, because, you know, once they say prize, trainees will be calling in and say, yes, I'm having this and having that. Make it sound all nice and healthy, and it's not the truth.
Well, they'll probably have to take a picture, send it in. We'll create some sort of criteria for that.
FBI investigation.
Right? But at the end of the day, if we can use what we are eating and inspire others, inspire healthy habits and healthy actions, all of that is the reason for your Lunchtime Doctor.
Nice.
So, Base is going to give you the numbers.
Of course, 627-3223, 625-2257. Your WhatsApp numbers are 3061065. And of course, we're being heard right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangeet 106.1, Sky 99.5, and Vibe City 105 FM. Feel free to message all the frequencies, and they will forward your messages right to us here.
So in today, we want to discuss a couple things that are surfacing right here. Some of the messages that we get on WhatsApp, some of the calls, the questions. As our young children, our adolescents return to school, they are experiencing a host of different emotional challenges. How do we build that resilience? How do we give them those coping mechanisms when parents themselves are struggling to even cope? But why is it important? So today we're going to talk on all of those topics. This particular month is also Polycystic Ovarian Syndrome Awareness. While you all know every day is a day for me to talk about health, we want to narrow into some of our callers who unfortunately experience the signs and symptoms of PCOS as they go along that journey, because that journey involves taking medication, dealing with concerns of infertility, dealing with cysts, dealing with hormonal challenges. It's quite a tedious journey. So let us get those questions and let's get this show on the road.
All right, let's get some questions here from the WhatsApp. Remember, our numbers are 627-3223, 625-2257. We welcome our new listeners and new callers as well. Doctor, what are the advantages of drinking CMOS?
So you all know I am very keen on ensuring we get these balanced nutritional meals. So yes, CMOS does have a host of protein benefits, and it is indeed quite, as they say, nutritional in terms of protein, in terms of the right carbohydrates. But here's my little concern with CMOS. In preparing the drink, it may be overly sugared. It may be created with full cream milk, condensed milk, evaporated milk. So you're now making something that's healthy rather unhealthy by adding a host of sugars and carbohydrates. So yes, there is a great amount of health benefits. It's considered one of these superfoods because it adds the antioxidants. And whenever we hear what is an antioxidant, antioxidants tend to reduce the carcinogenic pathway, which means all the different environmental carcinogens around that. These things help support those structures within our cells. That's one of the benefits of CMOS, but let's make sure we have it in a healthy way.
All right. Good day, doctor. How can I lubricate my joints and my knees when there's no cartilage? Thank you.
So one, let's dissect that. When it comes to the knee, that anatomy there, the cartilage tends to run down. It may be from previous trauma. It may be from not doing any of those strengthening exercises as we age. And then comes a time later on, as we hit that 40s, 50s, somebody told me they find at the age 40, everything just starts to break down. So this is why, one, we always talk about preventative health. So all of our younger ones who are listening, think of your body as a bank, and you need to put things into the bank and invest in your body, specifically the joints. So let's look at lubricating those joints in terms of the building the cartilage. Yes, there are some of those over-the-counter medications, your glucosamine, the chondroitin sulfate, and let me repeat that, glucosamine or chondroitin sulfate, they tend to help amplify or give that extra nutrient support for your knees. But guess what? You'll get that same activation by just engaging in a little bit of physiotherapy, any bit of exercise. And one may ask, how do I do exercise if my knee is damaged? Guess what? You need to do that rehabilitative exercises in order that the knee does not become further inflamed and does not develop further arthritis. In fact, in our Health Plus next week, Tuesday, we have already interviewed a physiotherapist, and she's going to specifically give us some of those tips, not only for our stroke patients, but for patients who have had specific arthritic damage.
Good day, doctor. What causes a late period, and what can you do to prevent it? Is there any vitamins you can take?
Very good question. So unfortunately, when it comes to the period, because it's hormonal based, I wouldn't necessarily lean into vitamins. You know, Trinidad and Tobago is a vitamin culture. So it's not necessarily a vitamin based, because now we're looking at the hormones. There are different things that would cause a delay in one cycle. First and foremost, if you are within the reproductive age, we definitely must rule out pregnancy. And one may think, really? Yes, that's the first thing we do. If you present in a clinic, if you present in a gynae office and there's a delayed period. But there are other things, obviously, outside of pregnancy that cause a delayed period. Stress on the whole, different environmental factors, even changes within the normal daily habits can also, the body is super sensitive. The body can respond in that delay. Here are some of the more pathological things that will result in a delayed period. If there is indeed a hormonal deficiency, so in a case of hypothyroidism, one may have delayed periods. Even if it's there's presence of cysts within the endometrial cavity. So it may be quite a few pathologies depending on the age. Let's make sure the person presents to the healthcare professional, be it a gynecologist or a pediatrician. So that's why I said depending on the age. The other reason we get the delayed period would be when women are hitting the perimenopausal time frame, because that's when cycles obviously become less. There's less release of the follicles, so that's what the period is. And of course, by time we hit now the age of menopause is when there's absolutely no period. So that's just a quick medicine 101 or gynecology 101 on what causes the delayed period. Obviously, there are many other causes. Those are more common causes. However, if there is a delayed period and it's causing further complication, next step, go to the health center or doctor.
Lunchtime doctor with the kind compliments of Superfarm. Let's take your calls right now. 627-3223, 625-2257. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Doctor, I would like to know what is the best thing to do for a breathing problem.
Thanks so much. Now, you didn't quite give any further explanation on it. If it's asthma, if it's directly related to smoking, if it's related to the allergies. So let's try to be as overview as possible. Anyone who's experiencing shortness of breath, first we dissect it. Is it respiratory, as in lungs, or is it cardiovascular in nature? And yes, if there's a degree of heart failure or any sort of cardiovascular compromise, one will present with shortness of breath. And that's where we need to get that checked out right away. So if you find you are breathing heavily, or after a little bit of exercise, you are becoming short of breath, or even during the night, you have breathed a completely different causation, that's OSA, obstructive sleep apnea. So if you find any of those things happening, we want to identify what exactly is the root cause. Most times than not, especially if it's cardiovascular and respiratory, they tend to be preventable factors. So once we identify the cause, we can eliminate the triggers. So let's say it's respiratory and it tends to be asthmatic in nature. So you're having the breathing difficulties from because of an asthmatic flare and asthmatic attack. They are indeed triggers. Sometimes it may be dairy. Sometimes it may be the dust in the environment. Sometimes it may be linens. I particularly know when I worked in the pediatric ward, we absolutely couldn't even have stuffed toys there. And think about it. People would want to bring stuffed toys for children, but that would aggravate their asthma. It will definitely cause a flare. So it really depends on what the trigger is. Most times are not, like I said, the causes are preventable once it's identified. So I urge you, sir, take that next step, go get it checked out. Hope that answers your question.
Yes, folks, once again, with the kind compliments of Super Farm, you're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor. Could the doctor spell the name of the medicine for the joint knees that she just spoke about?
No problem. Chondroitin, C-H-O-N-D-R-I-T-I-N, and glucosamine sulfate, G-L-U-C-O-S-A-M-I-N-E, sulfate. Mm-hmm. Hope that helped.
All right. Beautiful, beautiful.
Good thing I can spell as well.
Yeah. Very good, very good. I know you spoke about the late period, but we've seen a lot of young girls having their period from early, and some parents might be concerned.
Right.
Is there any reason for that?
Yes, certainly. So we see, and there's a specific title that we call that precocious puberty, where parents may see their little ones having their period from as early as age 8 or as age 9, and parents are quite surprised. Now, here's the reason that most have been discussing: the increase of hormones in, say, the chicken that we eat, the increase of hormones in the processed foods, that has been linked to precocious puberty and, of course, children obesity. So what our parents need to know, first and foremost, especially the mothers who must have this conversation, and it's a hard conversation, but it's a very necessary conversation. It's important to prepare your daughter. And even the dads, if the dads can get involved in the conversation, that's great.
Some single parent fathers.
Exactly. Yeah. It's important to prepare the daughter. First and foremost, let them know it's a normal part of their anatomy. They did not do something wrong. They did not all of a sudden damage themselves, and that's why they're bleeding. They don't need to feel alone in it. Basically, you wouldn't believe how many parents, they come and tell us that their daughter had the period 2 and 3 months ago and didn't tell them.
Okay.
But they seek the information in school by their friends. Mm-hmm. Or now, because of social media, there are so many sites, YouTube, they're going online and searching. Mm. I would encourage every parent, even if you feel not properly equipped, you can get that information. In fact, that's something we can even do as an article. How can parents engage, give that information on precocious puberty to their children? It's important that they know that the cycle will come, how to ensure hygiene. So you can show them the sanitary pads. Some schools, they do have the guidance counselors, and they give them that information. And that empowers both the parent and child relationship.
All right, let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor.
Good afternoon. I am 62 years of age, and my right foot from under, below the knee to the toes, are tingling. Can you tell me what causes it and what can I use for it?
Most definitely. No. I believe every single program and all of our frequent listeners will attest to this, that we get a concern very similar every single program. When it comes to tingling, especially in the lower limb, that is definitely some sort of nerve damage, a neuropathy. It could be, and if you have not been diagnosed, that's okay. Please ensure you're getting your sugar tested and your blood pressure tested. That's the first most common causes. Why? Because there's something called diabetic neuropathy, when the sugar values are way too high and that glucose goes into the rest of the body tissues, it can damage the nerve endings. And that's where the start of that nerve damage presents as this tingling. The next step may be numbness. The next step may be lower limb pain. That neuropathic pain can be quite intense to the point that persons may not even be able to mobilize. Those are two of your more common causes. There are other causes that can lead to tingling. If there's something concerned with the entire neural canal, as in the spine, if there's any pinched nerve, if there's any sort of concern, arthritic process, there may be spondylitis, as in from earlier up or lower down the lumbar canal. So let's just make sure that tingling, you take one step further and get it checked out.
All right, folks, good afternoon. Doctor, can pre-diabetes be reversed? And what is a pure carbohydrate?
Very good questions. So that word reverse is thrown around by way too many marketers and non-medical personnel. And it's a word that it's a big pet peeve of mine. I'm sorry to say, diabetes cannot be reversed, because once the cells hit a point of not being able to function well, then there's no going back. There's no cure to that. But I'm here to give you that level of hope. Guess what? It can be done. You can properly manage your diabetes that you may not even need medication. The person specifically asked, pre-diabetic. That's the best time, and I love to get patients in that pre-diabetic phase, because that means I can help them not hit diabetic phase, meaning the complications of diabetes. You can properly manage your pre-diabetes by just nutrition and exercise. And of course, we talked about it, the stress management. When we say nutrition, we have to really be tight and understand what is the glycemic index of certain foods. In fact, recently at the Diabetic Association, we did this testing with your continuous glucose monitor, your CGM. We just had some of the normal, typical foods that Trinidadians have, and we looked at the sugar spikes, the glucose spikes. So some foods can have quite a huge spike, meaning it will incur a lot of sugar, that difficulty in glucose metabolism in your body. So it's crucially important, if you want to stay in that pre-diabetic phase and quote-unquote reverse, because that's not a word that I like to use, but it can be done in terms of managing, controlling, ensuring that you don't go beyond. It can be done just by nutrition and exercise. And of course, some persons, based on what the HbA1c level is, they certainly will be placed on medications. Now, when we talk about the pure carbohydrate, that is something called a monosaccharide. And that is now going into the biochem of sugars. Most of our foods, and you will see polysaturated, so most of our foods are polysaccharides. They have several different types of sugars. Rarely do we get the pure carbohydrate sources. You want to stay to, as much as possible, your natural sources. So I hope that answers your question.
All right, lunchtime doctor with the kind compliments of Superfarm. Let's take a call. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Doc. Yes, Doc, I pushed about years ago on the question of own food, and by saying, well, cook.
That's yeah. You're breaking up a little bit, so we hardly... Yeah, you're not making it out too clearly. Now you'll have to call us back.
Sorry, I'm so sorry, sir. It was breaking up really badly.
All right, 627-3223-625-2257. Let's deal with some WhatsApp messages. A good day, Dr. Nbase. What are the factors that leads to appendicitis, inflamed appendix?
Very good question. I'm sorry to say, sometimes it could be absolutely no triggers. That little organ in the body that's part of the digestive tract, very little organ, the appendix, which some persons wonder what is its use for. If there's some sort of plug, if it becomes inflamed, sometimes it may be a lash to the tummy, sometimes it may be what we eat, because often we've had things like guava seeds unfortunately get stuck there. Sometimes it may be a little tumor or growth. There can be a host of things that will trigger an appendicitis, and there can be absolutely no trigger or preventative factor with that. And that's something that can be quite perturbing, knowing that one day you can be normal and another day one can present with this inflamed appendix. What I will say, however, the signs and symptoms of it is if there's pain in the tummy. So we call it lower abdominal pain. One may experience intense nausea and needing to vomit. One may even not be able to walk properly because the pain is so intense. One may need to sit in a crouched place to be able to allow the digestive tract to just kind of be in that fetal position. So the pain is quite intense. It's crucially important if you're feeling that sharp, sticking type pain, almost like if a knife hit you into that stomach. That's what the pain is being described as. You go straight to the ER. And when I say straight to the ER, do not pass. How do they say it in Monopoly?
Do not pass, go.
Don't pass, go. Go straight. Because that is what we call an emergency. And when I say ER, we would need to take you straight into theater to deal with appendicitis.
Let's try some calls here. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchtime, Doctor. Yes.
Hear me better now.
Much better now.
Yeah. Doc, I had heard that argument about hormones in meat about 30 years ago, and I had refuted it by saying, well, when you cook the meat, it will, the hormone will be destroyed. But, you know, it has kept coming up over and over again. I want you to develop that point for me a little bit, because we are seeing the argument being supported by the evidence of men having these breasts and so on, and early precocious puberty and whatnot. So develop that. Thank you.
So thanks so much. So yes, it's not only supported by different news structures, it's also supported by research. And it's not just, say, men developing breast tissue, but also we see precocious puberty in both males and females. And what happens is that in the milk, there are estrogens and there are progesterone. They're typically the hormones that are in women, whereas testosterone is the hormone, the most important endogenous hormone in men. While men do have a level of estrogen and progesterone, and women do have a level of testosterone, there is that unequal distribution that we're very familiar with. However, with the meats themselves, some of the meat may be injected with these growth hormones. And you would see sometimes they have these huge legs, huge thighs, and of course we know there's a lot of research on it. That, however, has been clamped down, but there can be still a significant level of estrogen and progesterone persisting. So this is why there is continuous research on the risk of these, as they say, endogenous hormone or sex hormones in meat and dairy products. Of course, these things are still under research, and certainly some of it can be quite controversial. All in all, I would continue to advise you, make sure, this is why they say, make sure you know where's the source of your meat, or if you can lean into different types of protein. I tend to lean into more seafood because that's something I particularly like. If I'm having meat, then I tend to stay into the lean meats. So hope that answers your question.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's go to our phone line, 627-3223-625-2257. You listen to the Lunchtime Doctor, Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangi 106.1, Sky 99.5, and Vibe City 105 FM. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Beth and Doc. Other than breast milk, what is the recommended milk for babies at 6 months old? Just been off here.
So, very good question. In fact, after 6 months, we tend to recommend weaning off the breast milk, because from age 4 months, they can actually start having pureed food. And when I say pureed food, that's a nice time to start to introduce pureed potato, pureed pumpkin, carrots. I even remember pureeing pilau for my little one, and he had that about 5-6 months. When it comes to milk, for that time frame, what is the recommendations by World Health Organization and all our pediatricians? 0 to 6 months, of course, as much as possible, breast milk. If that milk has to be fortified with anything, yes, there are other types of milks on the market. I'm not one that tends to endorse it, however. If it is necessary, let the pediatrician make that recommendation. So we have make the recommendation for, say, our little ones who are preemies, who are not fully developed, or those who would need extra calories, or the mom who is not producing enough breast milk, or even, say, the mom has to return into the workspace. So there are a host of other milks on the market. Different milks give babies different reactions. Like that's a discussion on its own. Wherever possible, after that 6 months time, of course, you can still continue with the 6 months, but that's a great time to start an introduction of the pureed foods. Hope that answers the question.
All right, let's take another call here, of course, and we have the messages. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello.
Yes,
good afternoon. I'm first time caller to Dr. Sophia. I enjoy her program every day she come on air, and she fill us in with very, very good information. I would like to know, when your blood report come back very bad, what does that mean?
Thank you so much for letting me know, and thank you for your comment there. The feedback is appreciated. I can imagine the turmoil and the anxiety you're experiencing in getting that blood report. Let me give you the opportunity to take a deep breath first and foremost. There are different blood reports. It may be a complete blood count. It may be the cholesterol. It may be the glucose, the renal function, the liver function. So I'm not too sure which one it is, but I'm here to guarantee you, whoever would have recommended the blood result, when you return to that healthcare professional, most times than not, those results are treatable. So let's say if it is a complete blood count and the hemoglobin is lower, and that's where it may have some sort of red flag on the blood result. We are able to treat that. When I say treat that, there are hematinics, there are medications, there are even nutritional support to build up back your hemoglobin. If it's the cholesterol, there are medications to reduce the cholesterol. If it's your glucose elevated, if it's the kidneys being affected because of high glucose or hypertension in the body, all of that is treatable. So my first answer to you is, please do not allow it to worry you. Let it activate you into action. There are many hundreds, and when I say hundreds, hundreds of thousands of patients that would get a report that says one or two things are off or bad, in the case maybe, or it may be red flagged, or they may say hi. Take the report to your healthcare professional, and they will go through bit by bit, and of course they will encourage where treatment is necessary. Keep in mind, sometimes we may need to repeat the blood result just to ensure the results are on alignment. I hope that answers your question.
All right. Hello. Good afternoon. Welcome. Hello. We're not hearing you clearly at all. Yes, it is, but we're not hearing you clearly on the phone, miss. We're now starting to hear you clearly, okay? Right.
Right.
Okay, good. Go ahead.
I'm calling to find out, like, having cysts in your belly, if it could treat it or you have to go through the operation.
Thank you so much for letting us know. So, if a surgery or a surgical recommendation operation was indeed discussed, then that is what is necessary at this point in time. You're not in front of me, so I won't have seen the ultrasound. I don't know the size of the cyst. I don't know what damage it's causing you. But I'm telling you, if a surgical recommendation is made, then that's probably the next step in terms of removing the cyst. Most times, the cyst can now inhibit or cause further complications, and that's why they would want to prevent that. Yes, there are medications, and I don't know which type of cyst it is, but there are medications if it's polycystic ovarian syndrome that can indeed reduce the size of the cyst. And of course, we said we're going to chat a little bit on PCOS today. So yes, there are medications to help reduce the size, but keep in mind, sometimes it may get exacerbated, there may be more than necessary, and the way for treatment, that management, would be surgical intervention.
Let's go to the WhatsApp. So, good day, doctor. I have a cough 3 weeks now, and I drink different cough syrup, all kinds of bush, and the cough is not going at all, and it's giving me short breath. No fever, no runny nose, just coughing. I stopped drinking soft drinks, only water. Please, can you help?
Certainly. Now, what we are seeing, and I do hope you got the COVID test checked to make sure that cough is not COVID, is that we are seeing patients who've had COVID in this last batch in terms of having something called a post-COVID lung syndrome, L-U-N-G, as in there's residual inflammatory mediators within the lungs, that persons are still presenting with this exacerbated cough. It may be because of mucus within the respiratory system. It may be some other things are triggering this activation of the cough. So here's what I suggest. One, you said you've tried a lot of medications. Most of the times, those medications do not treat the trigger for the cough. All they do are either cough suppressants or cough expectorants, meaning they just suppress the cough. They're not, so they're placating or palliating, or the expectorant, which brings out the mucus. However, we may need a mucolytic, which breaks down the mucus, or, as we said, treat the original reason for the cough. So if it's asthmatic in nature, that's what we'd want, need to treat. If it's a pneumonia developing, that's what we'll need to treat. I would suggest next time you go to the health center, probably an X-ray of the chest is needed to see if there are any patchy areas within the lung, to see if there is some pathology for this cough. I hope that answers that question, and I hope you get the relief you deserve.
20 minutes away from 1 o'clock, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor with the kind compliments of Super Farm. Good afternoon, doctor. I'm taking medication for high blood pressure, but it seems like the heart is racing. What else can I do?
Many things you can do. First and foremost, and I felt it in reading that message, there seems to be a level of anxiety with these medications and, of course, the high blood pressure. Yes, anxiety, worry, fear. All of that feeds into the mind, feeds into our emotional wellness, and can amplify your blood pressure and heart rate. Ever notice, say you have something that you're feeling nervous or anxious about, all of a sudden your heart rate elevates? So here's what you can do. One, continue to stay consistent with the medication. Two, let's look at your nutrition. Reduce the salt. Salt puts a ridiculous pressure on the body. It causes complications with the kidneys, causes complications with the eyes, causes complications with the lower limbs, causes complications with the nerves. Yes, all of that is what high blood pressure can do. One may even result in stroke, problems with the lungs. So let's make sure we keep that blood pressure under control. So in addition to taking the medication, reduce your salt intake, and of course any sort of salty products, processed foods that you're having. Number three, crucial. Here's where we need you to engage in some sort of de-stress activity, be it meditation, something that will calm your body and mind. Be it even, most of my elderly patients, they love going out in the garden. They say that's their me time. That's the time they become one with nature. They're nurtured by nature. And I love to hear it because I know they are actually doing nice, clean inhalations. They're taking care of their plants. They're feeling purposeful. And this has a positive impact on their blood pressure. Try it. I guarantee you're going to see the change. Another thing you can do is just a gentle walk outside. If you don't feel comfortable to do a proper walk, or when I say proper walk, it can be a walk where your heart rate is going up and you're burning some calories, you can just do a gentle slow walk, or you can actually up the ante and increase the intensity of the walk. So any level of exercise will also help manage that blood pressure.
Hello, doctor. Can you please explain the following on my medical ID card? The blood group A, rhesus negative D. Also, what is transitional lumbar vertebra?
Okay, so your blood group is indeed A negative. There are several blood groups out there. What we look at is, so there is A positive, A negative, B positive, B negative, O positive, O negative. What does that blood group mean? It's very important that you know what your blood type is. So if you ever to engage in, if you need surgery, if you have an accident, and I wish these things never happened to you, but if you need blood transfused, you must know what your blood group is. Being A negative is also important because most of the blood that's out there tends to be the O positive. So we'll need to ensure that you have blood type specific to be transfused. Now, I didn't quite get the very last one, but we'll have it sent over to me. You want to repeat it?
Yes. What is transitional lumbar vertebra?
Okay. So within our spine, we have several different vertebrae, and each vertebrae, think of it like Lego blocks that build up this long tower. That's what the spine is. The lumbar vertebrae is at the very end of the vertebrae, so we call that your lower back. The transitional lumbar vertebrae now would have been probably some sort of examination done in terms of being able to better assess the lumbar vertebrae. All in all, it's not necessarily a pathology. It is certainly something that will definitely be able to give you that aspect of the lumbar, of the spinal cord. Hope that answers your question.
Hi, doctor. What do you do for high cholesterol and how can you reduce it?
Right. Very good question. And I love when I get these questions on cholesterol or blood pressure or diabetes because it's so treatable. And when I say that, for all of our listeners who've been here, they know next year will be 20 years. Yes, this year is 19 years I'm in medicine. There's some things we are very comfortable with handling. Some things you feel like, okay, this is the first time we've seen this. High cholesterol is one of those things that we see all the time. Guess what? It's very treatable. But it takes your path and our part. One, we prescribe certain medications. There are a number of cholesterol-lowering medications, and just about all of them on the market are very efficient, providing you stay compliant with it. The other thing that's important is, obviously, and we talk about this over and over, what you eat. There are several foods with high cholesterols. When we say high cholesterol, your bad cholesterol. And this bad cholesterol, here's what it does. It goes and deposits in the arteries or the veins. It causes sludge. It causes blockage. That's what will lead to a heart attack or a stroke. So all of these things are very preventable by you just reducing your cholesterol. How is it? I might say it in a few words, but it takes work. So every single day, make sure you're watching what you eat. Reduce the amount of oils. Reduce the amount of fatty products in your meals. Reduce the amount of processed. Once you're looking at your nutrition, then we jump into the exercise. Exercise improves something called HDL, your good cholesterol, and that's what we want. In fact, cholesterol is indeed necessary, but a certain amount. So you want to increase in your HDL so your lower cholesterol or the bad cholesterol will indeed reduce. So those are just three quick things. Yes, there's medication to help reduce it. And when I say there's medication, we've had patients come in with all sorts of cholesterol levels, 300, 3-something, 400. And just by applying these measures. In fact, yesterday we had a caller talked about he stopped smoking after he had his heart attack. And he looked at his nutrition, he started exercise, and 16 months later, he could report how he's in better health. It's not going to happen right away. You're going to give yourself at least a 2 to 3 month time, but you will see that drop in your cholesterol.
627-3223, 625-2257. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor with the kind compliments of Super Farm. Hi, my daughter is 16 years and has sickle cell, and her eyes are always looking yellow. What can I do to clear them up?
Okay, my dear. Now, that yellow eyes is something called jaundice. So where the sclera becomes yellow, that's something we want identified and treated. It's not something that you can actually just clear up. That needs actual medication. We may even need to go into what we do is there's an exchange of fluids. So she may need to be transfused. If a patient with sickle cell has hit the level of liver malfunction that's causing this jaundice, then certainly she will need to be on medications. I do hope she's Parnix, be it in, I'm not sure the location that you're messaging from, but yes, there are specific hematology clinics for our sickle cell patients. I do hope this answers your question. This is something that concerns me terribly, especially because it's a complication of sickle cell.
Hey, doctor, what are the dangers of high uric levels and what is considered high?
Right. Now, once there is the uric acid value elevated in the body, then immediately the first thing we consider is that one is at risk of gout. The other things that, and what is gout? Like swelling of the, especially the big toe, it may be the joints. It may also have arthritic processes happening. And arthritis means inflammation within the joints. You will have pain, discomfort, even changes of the joints. I'm not going to give an actual value of in what is low and what is high, because it really depends on, in terms of age, it depends on quite a few factors. Either which way, when you are indeed being tested for your kidney function, we tend to include the uric value because we want to make sure that we're looking at the full, so your uric acid, sorry, we tend to look at it because all of our patients with high blood pressure, we must check their uric acid. A person with kidney stones as well would tend to have a high uric acid. Someone's with any sort of joint dysfunction, so they can be autoimmune diseases, may also have a high uric acid value. We've even seen high uric acid values in patients with Alzheimer's because they may have that unfortunate extra, what we say, these extra proteins floating around that unfortunately break down into uric acid. So there are quite a few things that will accelerate or amplify or increase the uric acid value. We want to ensure that if your uric acid is indeed elevated, that you're treated with the medications. And yes, there are medications to help lower your uric acid value. Hope that answers your question.
All right. Hi, good day, doctor. I've worked in the beauty industry for many years, and I've heard from several massage therapists that the use of anything with lavender will encourage the growth of estrogen and breast tissue in males, especially in young boys. Is there any truth to this?
So when it comes to lavender and this, in what it is that they say they tend to have a decrease in testosterone level. And so not just lavender, they say it tends to be lavender and tea tree oil in terms of being a hormone disruptor. So yes, it does. And lavender can affect the, what we say, the androgenic properties of testosterone, but it would have to be in significant amounts. Not just having cream on your body or lavender tea one day. It would take quite a significant proportion of lavender to actually disrupt your testosterone value. In fact, some people say they tend to avoid even things like lavender oil. And yes, while it can trigger, like I said, these hormonal changes, it would be after you're using it excessively, not say a one-off massage. Hope that answers your question.
All right, good day, doctor. How do you get rid of reoccurring UTI? I was given Cifran, but I had an allergic reaction. So I was given another that worked for a while. Now that I went to the clinic, they said that I still have blood in my urine. So what is the next step? What to use for this?
Okay, so let's again, UTI, urinary tract infection. We see this quite often. Most patients with diabetes do present with a recurring UTI or patients with any sort of anatomy dysfunction within that reproductive area, they can present with a UTI. I'm glad that you are already in a clinic, and it's unfortunate you were allergic or had a reaction to the antibiotic, but you definitely will need to continue on the antibiotic, and let's make sure we apply all of the methods of hygiene. Sometimes it may simply be just being mindful of wiping properly, being mindful of not ensuring there's any pathogens from the perianal cavity going into the normal tract of the front, and of course making sure, because some persons may hold their urine in the bladder for the whole day, and holding the urine within the bladder can now put one at risk of a UTI. So dehydration can also predispose one for a UTI. Constantly, as they say, flushing out the body. So constantly staying hydrated, passing urine, will of course prevent you from developing this recurring UTI. Hope that answers the question.
Good day, doctor. My son had a vasectomy procedure. How long does it take to heal?
So a vasectomy can heal very quickly in as little as 6 to 8 weeks. I'm hoping that it wasn't any sort of cancerous process that led to the vasectomy. Once that is, then obviously the healing process may be a little bit longer based on what the medications are. But if it was just a matter of fertility and a choice, then the healing process is quite quicker. Hope that answers your question.
Once again, folks, you're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor, the final Lunchtime Doctor for this week, with the kind compliments of Superfarm, 627-3223, 625-2257, and for your WhatsApp messages, 306-1065. Of course, we're here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangi 106.1, Sky 99.5, and Vibe City 105 FM. Let's take a call. Good afternoon.
Hello?
Hi, good afternoon. You're live on air. Dr. Mohammed here.
Good afternoon. So, I just want to find out that back was given beneath
my name. Excuse me, miss. We're not hearing clearly at all.
So, we're going to give you a chance to call back. Mm-hmm. There may be a little bit of feedback. I want to take just a few minutes to just talk a little bit about polycystic ovarian syndrome. This particular month is designated polycystic ovarian syndrome awareness, and in fact there are so many women suffering with PCOS. Here's why. Polycystic ovarian syndrome is directly related if there is some sort of insulin resistance, meaning all of our diabetic patients, they can present with PCOS. It may also, as one puts on weight and then falls into that mildly obese or moderately obese, there's that fluctuation of hormones, and unfortunately again may put one at risk of PCOS. There can also be, and we talked about the insulin level buildup, but if there is some sort of hormonal changes, and we mentioned them, that may lead to irregular period, missed periods, all of that can now lead to PCOS developing, even if they're cysts. So cysts within the ovaries, one may even notice changes in their skin. So these are the signs and symptoms now. One may notice a lot of hair on the body. So you may notice all of a sudden an increased amount of hair, or even thinning out of the hair. The most unfortunate consequence of polycystic ovaries is indeed infertility. We have a number of patients that only recognize that they are indeed PCOS when they are trying to get pregnant and may not get pregnant. And then they recognize that they are indeed diagnosed with polycystic ovaries. One may even notice, and these are the signs and symptoms to look out for, this hyperpigmented, a darkened area around the back of the neck, under the armpits, or just under the breast tissue. So all of that hyperpigmentation means there's insulin resistance. What do we do? First and foremost, please present to the healthcare professional, hopefully your gynecologist. Yes, it is very treatable. Sometimes we put one on birth control medications. Most times we put them on the diabetes medication to help manage the insulin resistance. That is, tends to be metformin or glucophage, something you hear quite often. Diet and exercise activity, physical activity, plays a significant role. There are other medications that we may use to manage the acne or the excessive hair growth. And of course, we want to apply some level of holistic treatment. This is where yoga, meditation to manage stress, because stress will trigger cortisol. So yes, to both men and women, stress triggers cortisol. But with polycystic ovaries, it is very common. Stress can be the only predominant causative factor to trigger polycystic ovaries. So to all of our woman listeners out there, keep that in mind. Open the conversation up with your friends. If you recognize that they're presenting with some of these signs and symptoms, and encourage them to go get it checked out.
Well, let's get those calls. Let's see if we can take two more. Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, boy.
Yeah, man.
My teacher, Mrs. Mohammed, she's teaching us very good. Doc, listen to this. Coconut oil, we cook with coconut oil. Kartik is the best oil for cooking, really. But olive oil now, I understand, cannot take heat and is not good for cooking. Do you like to hear what you have to say? Okay, thanks a lot. It's really important.
Thank you so much. So olive oil, so yes, both are useful in terms of health benefits. Can, however, cooking with olive oil be unhealthy? In fact, that's quite a myth. You can use that extra virgin olive oil. What you just need to know, however, is that it there's a that there's a lower heating point, so it will heat up very quickly, and that's something to know. In breaking down the oil components, say of coconut oil, it's very different in cooking with extra virgin olive oil. However, it is healthier to use the extra virgin olive oil because it has lower levels of cholesterol. So yes, I tend to use the extra virgin olive oil for my cooking and small amounts. Why? Because the smoke point of it and the oxidative stability, it doesn't require as much heat in terms of getting things in that cooking area. So let's say we can use both the normal olive oil, pure olive oil, extra virgin. The extra virgin olive oil is what's considered the least processed. So anytime you hear processed, you obviously know it's not much chemicals added to it. Yes, there's a pure olive oil as well. There's even something called light olive oil. All of that may have lesser grams of fat per tablespoon. Either which way, just use it in moderation, small amounts of cooking. And of course, wherever we can bake instead of frying things, we know we are better with those outcomes. Hope that answers your question.
All right, let's get a quick one inside. Hello, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Doc. Last week, the health center doctor sent me for an x-ray. On the back of my heel, I have a reddish swelling that does pain sometimes. For months, I have this. The doctor told me I have a heel sprain when she read the x-ray. What causes it? Does it have a cure? She also told me to take a towel and put it between my toes and pull it up and to wear shoes that have a little heel.
So thank you so much. So yes, there are home remedies that you can do for these heel spurs. What are the heel spurs? They tend to be these bony growths. Just exactly what you said about there, the towel, but you can use like a cold compress, in fact. It tends to reduce that pain caused by the heel spurs. Yes, you need that shoe support. You may use orthotics, where you have a little bit of a heel. That firm heel helps prevent putting way too much pressure on your heel. that will worsen the heel spur or the pain or discomfort. And of course, you can even use, say, some padded cushion socks, all those different things. Your usual over-the-counter medications will help in terms of pain relief. And I always, always, always recommend these exercises. So just like we did the exercises for the hand, there are those stretches for your feet. Think of stretching the toes, pulling it backwards, and then pressing it downwards. So we call foot flexes or calf stretches. All of that will help reduce the presence of your heel spurs. Hope that answers your question.
All right, Dunk, we have just about 25 seconds.
We're down to the grind. So this has been another eventful week right here on Lunchtime Doctor. As always, we're so grateful to Superfarm, your prescription of trust. And yesterday, we forgot to say that it was their elderly's discount special day. Every Tuesday, all of our listeners, there is that discount for our elderly population. Every single one of the callers here and our entire team at TBC, my gratitude always. And to those who listen constantly and share the message, you may not be brave to call, and that's okay. I appreciate every single one. What I want you to do is take one thing you learned from today, share it with someone, empower someone to optimize their health. It's literally in your hands.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.